You're listening to Jedi and Germs, a weekly podcast brought to you by the Torn by Sports Podcast Network and blogtalkradio.com. I'm Alan Zog, the Jedi. He's John English, the Germs guy. Hey, John.
Hey, Alan.
How are you?
I'm great.
Awesome. Devin, how are you?
I'm happy.
You're happy?
I'm happy.
Why are you happy?
Because when there's a birthday...
Oh,
we're happy.
Oh, well, let's just sing it.
Let's
just kick that baby. Oh, are we singing?
Okay, fine.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, Spider Mitchell.
Happy birthday to you. That was awful.
And we just had all of our listeners drop off. We're down to zero.
That's all right.
Yeah, happy birthday, Donovan Mitchell. Excited. And oh, by the way, as of right now when we record, 40 days until opening night. 40 days.
Which means we're at even less until preseason, right?
Yes. Yes, we are. The 29th of this month, the Saturday, first game of the preseason. So,
guys, it's close.
So I tweeted out yesterday, John, that, you know, it kind of worked out. I decided to be kind of creative. 41 days until the season started yesterday. And I tweeted out 41 and I said, what did I say? Oh, he wore number 41. Speaking of Thurl Bailey, I said, Donovan Mitchell scored a rookie career high 41 points last year. Actually a rookie record for the Jazz. And I said, and 41 is the amount of home games we have, 41 days till the game. So it was kind of fun to do a little research yesterday. I did not realize that Thurl Bailey wore number 41 for the Jazz, or I'd forgotten about that, actually.
You know what?
What?
We should have had him on the show,
right?
To sing happy birthday.
Oh, boy.
That would have been much better.
Yeah.
We did not plan this through. John, what do we have to do to get Thurl on the show? Do you have a contact?
Yeah. Dave Week.
Oh, good point. Good point. Oh,
next year, guys.
Yeah, Dave Week in January. January 25th, if I remember correctly.
Wow. Okay. Anyway, but we got some Jazz news, right?
We do have some Jazz news. John, where do you want to start?
There was a CBS Sports column this week where they talked about the top 10 rookies poised to make an impact this season, or most poised. And I found it cool that Grayson Allen was made the list. He came in at number 7. So not bad for the, what was he, 24th pick? That he's already being viewed as a rookie that can make an impact this season. So I found that quite interesting. And all the names above him are the names that you would expect.
Yeah.
You know, you got Luka Doncic is number 1, Trae Young, Wendell Carter, DeAndre Ayton, Kevin Knox, Colin Sexton, and then Grayson Allen.
Just out of curiosity and for argument's sake, does that seem high to either of you? Because the thing that you think of when you think of rookies making an immediate impact, you think of a team that's really kind of bottom of the league. You know, they're a lottery pick for a reason, and they're going to get a lot of minutes. And I don't know how Grayson Allen is going to fit into this rotation just yet. It's going to be interesting. Because the Jazz are going to have a healthy squad coming into this year.
Well, their logic is that whoever the first senior drafted is tends to make an impact, and Grayson is the first senior of this class. Other previous first seniors include Malcolm Brogdon, Buddy Hield, Josh Hart. All those guys were able to make impacts their rookie years, and so they see Grayson Allen as one who will be able to follow that trend.
I'm not going to disagree either. I'm going to be the first in answer to your question, John. No, I don't think that's high. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think Grayson Allen is going to have an impact on the Jazz, and I think it's going to be a very good impact for the Jazz. I think we're going to get – I think Jazz fans are going to be pleasantly surprised in what Grayson Allen does for the Jazz this year. I honestly believe that.
Well, I am hesitant to say so because I'm thinking about what you have in that backcourt for Utah. And you've got Ricky, you've got Dante, and you've got Donovan, who can all play the point. You've got Donovan, who's going to start at the two guard. Exum, they like to play a little bit of two guard, it seems like. Who else do we have that falls into that two spot? Because Allen isn't a three, I don't think. And if he is, he's behind Joe Ingles and Royce O'Neal in that rotation.
No, he's between a one and a two.
Right.
And you look at the ones, he would be behind Rubio and Exum. You look at the twos, he would be behind Mitchell and O'Neal. So I expect him to only get spot minutes here and there, maybe get some chances with matchups. And he will have to maximize those opportunities if he wants to get the minutes to make an impact. I think the biggest thing that's going to hold him back this year is just because the team is so deep and there are so many guys who are better than him ahead of him on the depth chart.
Okay, I want to throw one more name out there, and I'm really curious what Allen's going to say on this. What about Alec Burks? Because Burks rode the bench for much of last season, but as we recall, when it got to that Houston series, Alec actually performed very well.
Yeah, and the thing with Alec is he gets opportunities when there's injuries. When they did not have Rubio, they needed everyone else to move up a spot, and then so they needed that bench spark. And Alec stepped up to the plate. I think Alec's going to get more chances this year. Jazz might want to showcase him in case they want to do a midseason trade, but this is his last year under contract. I'd be shocked if he was a Jazz man next year, but I think they'll want to give him his chances too in case they can get something for him.
See, and I'm a big Burks fan. I have been from day one. I have expected more out of him over the years, and in part, his injury has kept him off the floor. You know, those injuries he had kept him off the floor for a period of time. When he's on the floor, he's electric. I know a lot of fans feel like he's very inefficient. It doesn't work. I mean, stats say he's inefficient, but you go back to the playoffs, there were some stretches in the playoffs when they needed him to step up, and he did. That's the MO of this team, though, isn't it? Like, just guys... Next man up, guys step in, guys make plays. And I think that to your point, what you said about Allen a few minutes ago, I think is going to be the case. The same with Burks. I think you're just going to get guys that are going to step up. There might be nights where Royce isn't what we expect of him. And that's when Grayson Allen's going to have to step in. That's when Alec Burks is going to have to step in. When I say that Grayson Allen's going to have an impact on this team, I believe he will. But I don't know what kind of impact that's going to be on the regular basis, because we don't know yet where he's going to fit on that rotation and who ahead of him is going to. You're right. I mean, you're right. Royce O'Neal proved himself, and so did, you know, and obviously Mitchell did last year. So Allen's going to have to earn himself some minutes. But I just feel like Allen and Burks, those kind of guys are going to have impacts on the team when they're called upon. They will.
They will. But the thing I'm thinking here is, just like I said, you've got these bottom teams who have drafted a rookie who they don't have any reason not to develop a young talent. Those guys really should make a bigger impact than Allen is going to get with spot minutes.
Perhaps.
So I don't know. I'm not saying that his impact won't be good.
Right.
That's not at all what I'm saying. I think he will be a good player. But I don't think the Jazz have any need to rush him along or kind of throw him to the wolves like you should see. Throw him to the wolves.
Yeah.
Minnesota joke. Like you will with some of these other guys who are maybe lower down the list. I mean, John, can you tell me who's after Grayson Allen on that list?
As far as wings go, I mean, I think we've hit him all. Neto would be after him.
Oh, no.
On that list of rookies.
Sorry. Who's 8, 9, and 10 on that top 10?
Yeah. Let me pull that back up. Number 8 is Marvin Bagley. 9 is Alize Johnson.
Who's that?
Yeah, that one doesn't ring a bell with me either.
Was he even drafted this year? Alize, there he is. Yeah, he was picked number 50.
Really? They're expecting him to have that high of an impact picked at 50. Who's he on? Who's he playing on?
Pacers.
That might be why. Nate McMillan might call on him occasionally.
Pacers are one of the worst rebounding teams last season. Johnson is a rebound specialist, a 6'8" power forward. Sounds like they're hoping that he's the next Paul Millsap.
No, that makes sense.
They're comparing him to Kenneth Faried.
Man, that's a reach, and, though.
Like, yeah, yeah, but you're, yeah. That part of this article is a reach, though, isn't it? I mean, we're already proving that point that some of this is a reach.
You were picked 50. We expect you to make an impact of a number 9 guy drafted. Okay,
who's number 10?
Dante DiVincenzo.
Okay,
the Bucks.
Okay, and that
and
sounds
he
about
was
right
a
too.
High hyped guy. Yeah,
yeah, that sounds about right.
So that means that Jaren Jackson Jr. at number 4 did not make this list. I don't think I can agree with that.
No, I don't either.
He looked great in summer league.
Yeah, he did. That's the guy that was picked by the Grizzlies, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I expect him to have, especially under the circumstances, what the Grizzlies are looking at. Jaren Jackson's the one guy I think needs to be in the top 10 of that list because I think he's going to have an impact for the Grizzlies early on. In fact, throughout the season. So, yeah, that's an interesting list. You know, here's my question to you, John. It's crazy that we're going to compare it this way, but I feel like Grayson Allen's impact for the Jazz this year might be similar to the curve we got from Royce O'Neal last year, right? And it's crazy that we're going to compare him this way because Royce O'Neal when was he drafted?
He was undrafted.
I thought he was undrafted.
That's what I thought. He was undrafted. So we're talking about comparing a drafted rookie in Grayson Allen with Royce O'Neal. But I feel like his curve this season will be similar to Royce O'Neal's. I think the focus on his game is going to be on the defensive side of the ball. They're going to put him in situations where he's going to have to guard guys. And his ability to shut down the opposition is going to be noticed early and often. Just like Royce O'Neal. I mean, think about it. Royce was good offensively, but how much attention was on his defense for a good portion of the season, right? So I think Grayson Allen's going to be in that same type of situation with the Jazz. I think he's going to impact because Royce O'Neal impacted the Jazz last year. There's no doubt about that. He was an impact for the Jazz. And even in the playoffs, he was an impact player. And I think Grayson Allen's going to have that same type of season for the Jazz this year. Would you agree?
Yeah. And the thing with Royce is, his opportunity came from the Jazz just having a really bad start.
Yeah.
And Quinn just kind of looking for something to work. And Royce proved himself on the defensive end first. He was decent offensively, but he really had that defensive spark that they really needed from the wings.
Right.
And Grayson's specialty is not going to be defense. His specialty is going to be shooting, passing, playmaking.
But yet he's a good defender. I mean, we've seen plays from him in college where he's a scrappy guy on the defensive end of the ball, isn't he?
He is, but I don't have high hopes for him in his rookie year to be this great defensive guy. I think he can get there, but I just see that. And when I watch summer league, he was fine, but it wasn't anything to write home about.
Yeah. Okay.
And that's, When you're on the best defensive team in the league, that's going to stand out.
Right.
And the jump to the NBA, I mean, that will trip some guys up.
I think I'm going to disagree slightly because I think he's going to surprise you on defense. I really do.
Okay. I will sit back with arms folded and say, surprise me.
and here's my hope.
Yeah.
My hope is that Grayson Allen is buried on the bench.
Why?
Here's why. Because that means that the rest of your players are healthy.
Okay.
And I don't want to deal with another injury-prone season. So I hope he's ready, and I hope he's developing as a player, and I hope he gets those end-of-game minutes. But I don't want to see him getting minutes over Dante. You know, I like what Royce brings to the table.
Right.
You know, I don't want to have what we've been through in some of the previous seasons where you have guys go down and then you have to have someone step up.
Right.
I just want him ready when he's called upon. And if I have a healthy Rubio and a healthy Exum,
right,
healthy everyone, I don't see Grayson getting a ton of minutes. And honestly, I'm okay with that.
That's fair.
Here's the thing that people need to keep in mind, though, because there are still some non-residents. Maybe they like to step on the island every once in a while. But there are still several Dante doubters out there, aren't there?
Yeah, absolutely there is.
Yeah.
And so my concern here is if Dante struggles, that those non-residents, occasional visitors to the island, will say, we want Grayson.
Yep.
Don't play Dante. And yep. Slow down, give him a chance. Dante had a limited season last year. And as you recall, he had a great closing out of that Houston series when he was playing against Mr. James Harden. So I'm excited for Dante. I'm excited to see the guys healthy and,
right.
and kind of playing as the team that they were at the end of the season, hopefully at the start of the season.
Agreed. Okay, last item of Jazz business. John, I didn't get a chance to throw this in the notes, but did you read the article, and I am at a loss where it was at, posted just a couple days ago, talking about how the Jazz making no impactful moves in the offseason, picking up Grayson Allen, are still slated to be the second best team in the West, and here's why. And I can't even remember who wrote it. Just a couple of days
I've
ago.
I've seen stuff like that before. That sounds like it was a Ringer article.
I think so. Was it the Ringer?
Let me find it.
Devin, you know where I'm talking about.
Yeah, because I sent that out. It was it 2 days ago?
It was 2 days, 2 or 3 days ago. And I read it, and it was good.
It was 538.
Oh, it was 538.
Yeah.
And who wrote it for 538? I'm trying to remember his name.
It is loading. Their name. It could have been a female. There's
should really do this in advance so we can sound all prepared and stuff.
Chris Herring.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I got it.
Yeah. Hey, I was prepared on this. Come on. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
No, I wanted to touch base on this article. It was a really well-written article. You know, it's interesting to me that articles like this get posted after we have some of the reaction, fan reaction we had within the Jazz fandom, as well as outside of it with analysts and otherwise saying, oh, the Jazz didn't make any moves. But here are some people that are saying the Jazz didn't make any moves, and here's why it was good that they didn't make any moves. And talking about how good they're going to be without making those moves. It's a great piece. It was a great, great piece.
Well, the biggest thing is when you look at the Jazz as a unit, like we were just saying, when they're healthy, when they had everyone back, the article touched on what their win percentage was or something like that. I don't recall exactly where it was. But they were like a 63 win team playing at that rate, right?
Yes, they were. From January 12th on, they were incredible.
So it's kind of sad to say the Jazz didn't do anything. Well, they did. They brought back Dante. They got Dante on a pretty good deal. They brought back Derek Favors on a good deal.
They got Grayson Allen.
1-1. They drafted Grayson Allen, who I think was someone that they really wanted.
Right. And they're going to be healthy, assuming everything falls into place. You're looking at a healthy Jazz squad.
Right. Utah got Gobert back from injury, found a rhythm, and then finished the year winning 29 of the final 35 contests.
Yeah, 29-6.
John, did we need to do anything?
I didn't feel like we did. I mean, the team was so good last year in the second half that, I mean, some people might have been upset. Overall, I think a lot of people have been positive that they were able to get the band back together and let's do this again.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, sorry to throw that wrench in the show this morning. I know preparedness. It's okay. It's an article I'm okay not being prepared for. So anyway, let's move on to NBA news and notes. What do you want to talk about this week on NBA news?
We had a listener request last week for us to rank the starting lineups of all the teams. And so I did that. I took the starting lineups of all the teams. I took it from ESPN projections on starters. I did change one. They had Elfrid Payton starting over Drew Holiday. And I think Drew Holiday is going to play enough next season that I switched it out for him. But
with the Pelicans, right?
With the Pelicans, I ranked them all 1 through 30, and then I averaged their numbers together and then did the teams. And this made me want to change a couple of my over underscores.
Oh,
because this is what I came out with. I came out with Golden State's going to be number one. Utah and Oklahoma City are tied for number two. Fourth, I had Houston. Fifth, I had Denver. Sixth, I had Minnesota. Seventh, I had the Lakers. And eighth, I had the Spurs. Now, not making that top eight, even though our playoff team last year was the Pelicans. Their other pieces just happened to not rank high enough. But I do think Davis is good enough that they'll probably be able to overcome some of that. And the Lakers, you know, they have LeBron James, so they're going to be elevated.
I agree with you on the Pelicans. It's a mistake to put Elfrid Payton as a starter. With the way Drew Holiday played in the playoffs defensively, oh my gosh, if that guy's not your starter to start the season, there's something wrong with you.
Yes, Phoenix came out surprisingly strong. I actually had Phoenix as the ninth team. So who knows? Maybe with Igor there. And
who's their starting lineup?
Their starters are Eli Okobo, Devin Booker, TJ Warren, Ryan Anderson, and DeAndre Ayton.
Interesting. And you had them at where?
They wound up coming in ninth in the West for me.
Wow.
Do you think Ariza gets that starting spot at the three over Tucker?
No.
Over Warren, you mean?
No. Or, yeah.
No. No, he'll come off the bench, and he'll be okay with that, too.
Yeah, I think they will sixth man him.
Yeah.
Because Warren's been pretty good for them.
Okay.
Yeah. And like I said, Ariza's okay being a bench guy, being a six-man guy. He's that far into his career now. I mean, he's getting paid well. Gets to Phoenix. I think he's at that point where he's okay doing that. And he's probably okay mentoring a couple of those guys in the starting lineup too. You know he's going to mentor some defensive, situations for some of those guys.
Yeah.
Ha, 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 ha.
No, what are you laughing about? You're talking about Ariza being very good defensively. Why wouldn't he mentor some of the young guys?
Devin Booker, defense.
Okay, maybe Devin Booker is the reason why Ariza ends up being a mentor. Maybe Devin Booker learns a few things.
He's the reason?
Whoa. All right, so John, take us through the East.
Wait, there's a few more in the West.
Oh, do you want to still go to the rest of the West? Okay.
Yeah, the rest of the West is Clippers, Pelicans, Mavericks, Blazers, Grizzlies, and last place is the Kings.
Whoa. Wait a minute.
Even with Fox, huh?
Wait a minute. Where do you have the Blazers?
Yeah. They came out pretty low. 13th, I think. So Dame and CJ were both high.
But the rest of their
starting lineup is Mo Harkless, Al-Farouq Aminu, and Yusuf Nurkic.
Fair. You're talking about, I mean, Nurkic is good, but the other two.
I had all those guys in the 20s for how I ranked their positions. So, yeah.
Devin, you got to look at it as the sum of the whole, not the individuals. The sum of the whole. Come on, Dev.
No. There's got to be a better way. That's way too low.
But look at the sum of the parts. Come on.
But I'll say this. Portland's number would have put them, ninth in the East.
So you're telling me, Allen, because you want to be the defender here, John, I like the fact that you did the work. You can sit this one out if you want to. You're telling me, Allen, that you would take Phoenix over Portland.
Well, no, okay, I'm with you there. You put it that way, I get that.
You're telling me.
So no, I wouldn't.
It's weird. It's a really weird way to look at it.
But when you're doing it the way John's doing it, when you're breaking down the starting lineups only, he's got a point with some of these guys.
Man, we might have to get a video gamer to give us all the average or all the player scores, because it's one thing to rank the players,
right? Okay,
1 through 30, and then to look at, like, because number 10 on a point guard may be very different from number 10 on a power forward in the league, because it's a very, very good point guard group that we have.
But John, Devin makes a good point, because Phoenix versus Portland, that's quite a bit of a gap from 9th to 13th when you think about it. And you mentioned a bunch of guys there that you expect would be better than the other team.
I mean, they're only 2 points apart, but that's where they rank. That's how it came out.
Yeah. Interesting.
2 points isn't a lot.
I mean, I'm a stats guy. I recognize this is gigantically flawed. This is just me giving my opinion on one, and it's just how it all happened to come out. Okay, so the East, it goes Boston, Milwaukee, Washington, Philadelphia is your top four. Indiana, Toronto, Charlotte, and Chicago, strangely enough.
Devin is...
And that's your top eight there. And then your lottery, a lot of them were kind of close together, but it was Detroit, Cleveland, Atlanta, Orlando, Miami, Brooklyn, and the Knicks came in last because they anticipate Porzingis is going to be out for the majority of the next season.
Between Devin's hitting his wrist here and looking at me, just sternly hitting his wrist, and now as soon as you get into, he did that before you got into East.
I was doing Dame time. Dame time, and we're down by two.
He goes from that to, you should have seen the look of aghast on his face when you started going down that list of Eastern teams.
And here's why. Here's why. You had Toronto, what was it, four or five? No, it was okay. And then you got Toronto, Chicago. Yeah. And when Chicago was a playoff team, I'm done, John. The system is broken.
They're not a playoff team.
Defend this.
That's how their starting lineups rank. And when you factor in everything else, like bench units and everything, then I'm sure it all comes out different. Chicago is a very thin team. They have a pretty decent starting lineup.
Okay.
They do.
Okay.
He's not lying. They Name their starting lineup, John. Name their starting lineup. Okay.
Chris Dunn, Zach LaVine, Jabari Parker, Lauri Markkanen, and Robin Lopez.
He's not wrong. That's a very good starting lineup.
It's not very good. It's
good. Okay, it's good. Fine. I'll take
ranked eight. That would have tied for 10th in the West.
Okay, I can breathe again.
Just how it comes up.
And here's the thing that I thought of before, because when we were talking about the West, you had Utah and Oklahoma City tied. I think that Utah and Oklahoma City's actually got a better starting lineup when you just are like looking at individual players, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
But I think Utah's the better team when it comes down to coaching, playing as a unit, and bench, and then kind of the intangibles that you're not going to see when you're just looking at,
especially when you throw Roberson back into that lineup
again. You know, and you take Melo
and see with the Jazz. They're so good because I had Donovan come out as the third best shooting guard and Rudy is the second best center.
Yeah, that's good.
Okay. Okay. So
you feel better now, Dev?
Yeah. Let's talk about the East some more. Sorry.
Okay. Now the thing with the East, I think I had the over on the Knicks. I thought maybe they'd be able to put something together, but this was their anticipated starting lineup. Trey Burke, Tim Hardaway Jr., Courtney Lee, Mario Hezonja as their starting power forward, and Enes Kanter.
It's not a horrible group.
That came out as the worst starting lineup in the league.
Okay, fine. It is a horrible group. So I'm trying to talk somewhat positively here, but I can't. I know. It's
funny because if you look years back, there's a bunch of guys there that I think we liked. When Trey Burke was drafted, I was ecstatic.
Oh, by the way, that's a group of lottery picks right there, too. One of them being a third pick in the draft.
Right, right. Burke was the number one point guard taken in his year.
Kanter was number three the year that he was picked.
Hardaway was a guy that I really liked and kind of hoped the Jazz would go after in the draft. John, you really liked Mario during his draft year.
I did. I bought the hype.
And Courtney Lee's just been a good role-playing guy throughout his career.
I still think he is.
So, I mean, when you think about it, you're like, oh, yeah, I once upon a time would have loved that starting lineup. And just how wrong we can be.
Again, that's when I go to the sum of all the parts, because some of those guys you'd probably still take as a singular
as a bench guy, whatever.
But as an entire group as starting lineup, yeah, you'd start saying it that way. It doesn't look so good.
Do you think they can put anything together, John? I mean... You've got some talent there.
See, I think Knox has a ton of potential. And however soon they get Porzingis back, you know, maybe they can make some moves. And I don't know if Trey Burke's really going to be the starting point guard. They got like three point guards there, and any one of them could start because none of them are good enough to be the obvious choice, but you still got Frankie there. Who's their other guard?
I don't remember.
Did they start Jarrett Jack last year? I think a couple
of times they might, but I think he mostly came off the bench.
To the roster. Emmanuel Mudiay. They got
him. That's right.
Yeah, any one of those guys could wind up emerging as the starter. I think Trey Burke had some really good games at the end of the season last year that they give him an edge, but you know, who knows?
Mudiay is another one of those guys that's dropped because, you know, how many years ago did we see him playing in Denver and we thought, man, this guy might turn out to be something decent, right?
Yeah, I thought he would, but his shooting just never improved.
No, it didn't.
And they had to move on. Okay.
All right. Well,
so that was my little exercise.
It was a good exercise. And I don't remember who requested it of you, but hopefully he gets a chance to hear this. And I want some feedback on this. I do. I mean, I'm getting live firsthand feedback from Devin. I want to see some of our listeners come back with some thoughts on some of this.
And I really do. I'll do it if I have to go find the 2K starting lineup rankings.
Yeah.
And just average the numbers for each team and then see what we get just by averaging their scores, putting them in order.
Okay, there's your homework. And
that's good too. And also if they do NBA rank this year, I'll go ahead and calculate all that too.
We're gonna get to the bottom
of this. Aren't we about due for NBA rank, John? Because usually this is about the time they do it every year.
No, it usually starts in preseason.
Okay.
But see, last year they weren't going to do it at all. And then they like did it at the last minute.
That's right.
I was really mad. I was complaining to them like every week. It's like, where's NBA rank?
That's right. Well,
and I think that's because they laid off most of the guys that really did the research for that.
I'm hoping they do it this year. And I hope with their new group of people, they do it. I want to see it. So.
And I want top 400, none of this top 200 stuff. 400. They used to do 500, and that was awesome. That meant they always had 20 or 30 players who didn't play an NBA minute. But I want the full 400.
Yes.
Number me to death.
There you go. John will geek out on all of it. any other thoughts on NBA this week?
What else happened this week? Oh. The most interesting man in the world retired this week.
Yes, he did. Farewell to Boris Diaw.
We had to play like a 15-second clip from one of those commercials.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, he was awesome when he was here. He's a great ambassador for the team. Loved him in interviews. I think he played overseas last year. But yeah, he is officially retired now.
We were
blessed to have be able to call him a jazz man.
Farewell to the coffee. I mean, everybody talks about Joe Ingles' love of coffee, but can he really compare to that of Boris Diaw and his own coffee machine in the locker room before and after every game? I mean, I think Boris Diaw takes the coffee on that one. So, yep, kudos to a great career.
Picture this, some offseason, just go on like a cruise with Hal Netto, Rudy Gobert, Joe Ingles, Boris Diaw.
Yes.
That would be like you cannot have a better quartet of NBA players to go on a cruise with.
Okay.
Just to hang out with those guys and go to different countries with them. That would.
Well, and here's the idea for Boris Diaw now that he's retired. I want him to travel the world to different countries and try all their coffees and report.
Yes.
And
that
I want
can it to be a travel show.
Yeah. I want it to be a daily update.
Host a travel show.
Yes. A daily travel show, daily update, whether it be, you know, kind of like the Greek Freak did for a while this summer, talking about the foods that he was trying and stuff. I want Boris Diaw to do the same thing. Some sort of a daily vlog, daily blog, daily something on Twitter that this is what he was doing, you know, trying out coffees every day. So just, do that, Boris. We know you listen. Do that.
I'm just asking, how's my sound been so far?
You've been great.
Fantastic.
You sound wonderful.
Good. You sound amazing.
He can make a three-pointer from the two-point line.
That was just me fishing for compliments, so thank you, guys.
He doesn't go for a rebound. The ball comes to him.
You're going somewhere with this, Devin.
He can turn water into coffee using only a coffee machine.
He is
the most interesting player in the NBA. Something like that. I don't know.
All right. So I think that's all of NBA news and notes this week. Thank you, Boris Diaw. I've watched you your whole career and enjoyed every bit of it. I know we all have, and it's been a fun one to watch. So let's move on to Devin's quick hits.
Start with college football.
Okay.
BYU got a win.
Yes, they did.
What are your takeaways from the game?
John?
You took John away from the game?
No, I'm letting John go first.
Okay. Sorry. I was on mute. Can you say that again?
BYU got a win last week against Arizona. Clap, clap.
Yeah.
What are your takeaways from the game? I'm just wondering, are you a believer that this is a different BYU team? I mean, clearly it is, but
yes.
How different? Was Arizona just overhyped? What's the impression here? I know it's week one. Where are you at?
Well, I was pleasantly surprised at how good BYU looked on both ends of the field. Arizona was very hyped by the announcers, but I felt that it was more BYU just being that much more improved last year than whatever Arizona was doing. Canada looked great. He can find all those holes, get the extra yards. The defense just would not let Arizona's quarterback do anything. They played it really safe in the fourth quarter, but I guess that's okay. So yeah, I was impressed. I'm like, good. This is a season that I can watch, because last year, halfway through the season, I was like, I don't even care anymore. But this season that's a great first step for this season.
No, I agree. I was pleasantly surprised overall. I have no expectations for the Cougars this year. I really don't. I hope for 6 wins in a bowl game, and I still do. But watching that game, you can already see they're doing things differently. On the defensive side of the ball, I felt like there were some mistakes and concerns I had, especially late, some mental mistakes. But overall, I thought they played well. Yes to both of your questions, though, Devin, because I think that Arizona was overhyped. But I also think that they did not utilize Tate as they should have, because I think Tate's better on the run than he is in a pocket passing situation. So I felt like they didn't release him and let him move as much as they probably should have. On the BYU offensive side of the ball, which has been the question the last couple of years, I feel like they're going back to the tight end game again. They went to the tight end a lot in this game, and BYU fans should be happy, because the tight ends is where it's been at for quite a long time down there. And I'm kind of glad they're going back to it. And they utilized 3 or 4 of them, and then they ran those jet sweeps. They, Canada, John's right. Canada had a great game. So I like the things I'm seeing on offense. I don't think they opened the entire playbook against Arizona, but I think they showed me that they're going places.
Okay, so this week, what are your predictions? They will play Cal at home.
Again, I have no expectations. I don't expect the Cougars to win that game, but if they do, hey, I'm that much more excited, but I don't know that I see it. And it was funny, because I think the day after that game, I think early numbers out of, I'm not sure Vegas or not, but had the Cougars favored by 2 in that game because it's a home game, but I don't know that I'll go with that. I don't know what the odds are now. We're a day ahead of it, but I don't know what the odds are now.
Okay. John?
I think it'll be close, and I'm more encouraged now that I think BYU will be able to get a win on that. I was just looking around at different rankings and expectations for Cal, and it doesn't look like they expect much from Cal this year. So cool. Let's be optimistic and give it to BYU.
Okay. Let's touch on another college football team, University of Utah. Utes will face Northern Illinois this week. Who are you taking?
Utes.
That's simple, huh?
Yeah. That's simple. Northern Illinois. Yeah.
Okay. Let's go to Utah State then. Last week, Utah State gave Michigan State a scare. Ended up losing 38-31. This week, they'll play New Mexico State. You think the Aggies will get the win at home?
Yes,
yeah,
I do.
I watched the highlights of that game, and that I just felt so bad for Utah State that they came so close, and that deflected pass just killed their game. But yeah, I think they'll come in. They'll have New Mexico State. They're going to be furious. They're going to want to reestablish themselves. I see them just stomping on them.
I watched the late third quarter and into the fourth quarter of that game against Michigan State, and the Aggies looked impressive. It's unfortunate that the interception happened when it did, but they looked extremely impressive against a very good Michigan State team on the road.
When you're talking about this, and I know the early season rankings were, you know, not fans of, but Michigan State is traditionally a very good team, usually finishes the season ranked in the top 25 or close to the top 25.
They were ranked 10th or 11th going into Saturday.
They are still ranked. With that in mind, and with as well as Utah State played, do you think this is going to be a very good season for the Aggies, or do you think it's just going to be kind of average?
I think it's going to be good. I think they have a chance to win the Mountain West.
Germs guy, agree, disagree?
I say above average.
Okay.
I think that they can compete with Boise this year.
Okay.
I'm going to say it right now because I think they can, and I think that's there's an opportunity for them.
And I think that all Utah, state of Utah football fans would like to see that happen.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
One of the few football things we can all agree on, we would like to see Utah State be better than Boise State.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Football-related, NFL kicked off last night. Eagles got a win. Falcons were unable to make it happen at the end of the game. What are your predictions for this season? Really what I'd like to know is, who do you think is going to make it to the Super Bowl?
Wow.
I know we're just starting off, but the reigning champs get a win. Do the reigning champs make it all the way back? Do they not? Are there other teams that you think are going to contend?
Well, I think the Eagles could make it back. I think the Vikings are on a good trajectory right now, too. So don't sleep on the Vikings. And then on
it's
the,
so early.
Yeah, it is. on the AFC side of the ball, I mean, John Gruden might be just what the Raiders needed, right?
They just traded away their best defensive player, though. So
I know. There's a lot to mull over on that one.
Do you want me to like start rattling down the list here, and you tell me if a team is a contender or not?
Okay.
AFC, Bills.
No.
No.
Dolphins.
No.
No.
Patriots.
Yes.
Yes.
Jets.
No.
No.
Ravens.
Middle of the pack.
Bengals.
No.
No.
Browns.
No.
No.
Steelers.
Yes, but I mean,
I have a hard time counting them out.
I do too, but Le'Veon Bell is still holding out, isn't going to play week one. I don't know how long that's going to last. I don't know. I'll say yes because they have a history that says otherwise. So,
okay. Texans.
middle of the pack still for me. I'd like to see him.
Right. I just want to know contender or no.
No.
Colts.
No.
No.
Jaguars.
Yes.
Yeah.
Man, look how far we've come.
Dark horse. Yeah.
Tennessee Titans.
No.
No.
Broncos.
No.
Nah.
Don't look at me like that, Devin. Put your fandom aside on that team, all right?
Chiefs.
Chiefs feel like a first-round team.
No.
So are they a contender? Not really.
No.
I mean,
no.
Okay.
No.
Chargers.
No.
No.
Raiders.
No.
No.
So your AFC, the three teams that you said are contenders, we have the Patriots, the Steelers, and... Who did we say? Jaguars.
Jaguars.
There's no surprise there, though, is there? I mean, all three of those were contenders last year, weren't they?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Okay, let's go to the NFC. Eagles.
Yes.
Yes.
Cowboys. Be honest. Be honest.
I think they'll have a winning season, but I don't know.
Contender, no.
And the NFC is a lot tougher.
Yes,
so,
it is.
No.
Giants.
No.
No.
I think the Giants will be better than you expect.
They will be.
I don't think they'll
okay.
be contenders, but I'm going to say
Odell,
that right
Odell
now.
Beckham Jr. is your key right there. If he can, and he and Manning can play well, then I might put them in the contending realm. I might.
And their rookie. What's his name? Barkley?
Yes. I have high hopes for their running back rookie. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, okay. Redskins.
No.
Alex Smith there. Still don't think it's enough either.
No.
Bears. They just got a great defensive player.
I'm going to still say no. They haven't shown me anything. Even with,
I didn't think so either. Lions.
No.
They're finally getting better, but
they're not a contender though. No.
Okay. Packers.
No, they're not.
Yes.
Yes.
Vikings.
Yes.
Yes.
Panthers.
No.
What are we 2 years away from their Super Bowl appearance?
Yeah, but what did they do last year? I'm trying to remember.
This year, they seem like another first round team.
Yeah.
Okay, Saints.
No.
No.
Bucks.
No.
No.
Falcons.
Yes.
Yeah, although they didn't look great yesterday.
No, they didn't. My understanding was that game was ugly last night all around anyway.
Well, I had a fantasy player in there, so I was paying close attention.
Okay, Cardinals.
No.
No.
Rams.
Nope.
No.
Really?
No, I don't think so.
No.
I think the Rams, I think they're going to be good this year.
They're playing in a tough division, but I don't. Are you going to say they're going to be better than the Niners?
Yes.
I don't know about that either.
Yes, I am.
Okay,
we'll
fine.
We'll see. Okay, 49ers.
No, I don't think they're contender. I think they're going to have a much better season, but I don't think they're contender. I think they're competing for playoffs.
Seahawks.
No.
I'd love to say yes, but I don't see it.
They took huge hits. I mean,
they lost a lot of players.
Well, and they took probably their biggest hit was losing Sherman.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Okay, so here's what we have in the NFC. You said Eagles, Packers, mm-hmm. Vikings,
Falcons.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
So we've got seven teams that we think are contenders going into the season.
And to John's point, four of those are out of the NFC. The NFC is just tough, just tougher.
Okay. We will see how this shakes out. Another quick hit, WNBA. Not sure if anyone cares, but if anyone listening wants to make a kitchen joke, you can just stop listening now. I am interested. I'm not watching the games, but I am curious who's gonna win it because there have been some exciting games. There have been some fantastic performances.
Yeah, I've heard.
Did you see or even see the highlights from is it Sue Bird that plays for the Seattle Storm? Dropped like 24 points.
I haven't seen any highlights, honestly.
Go check on the NBA Facebook page. I know they shared the video of it. They shared the highlights of her game. She was taking Steph Curry threes out there and just drilling them. So I don't understand how people want to say that, you know. It's not exciting. If you've got a team in it, I think you would definitely be excited. But where Utah doesn't have a team, maybe that's part of it here. Anyway, we've got the I think it's Washington Mystics against the Seattle Storm. Game one starts tonight. I'm going to see if there's any television for it for you guys. How am I supposed to watch this if it's not on TV?
Well, that's been one of the biggest arguments, actually, that it has not been on TV. In fact, I saw a big...
Really?
I saw a big...
I mean, like ESPN2 or something?
Okay, while you're looking it up, I saw a big to-do last weekend, the holiday weekend, about how none of the games were on TV in favor of a few other things that were on.
Okay, yeah. Sue Bird and the Storm versus Deladon and the Mystics starting Friday at Seattle's Key Arena. Man, that needs an NBA team there, too.
Yes, it does.
On ESPN News.
News.
Yep.
At 7 o'clock Mountain Time.
There you go.
So if you're interested.
But they do get ABC on Sunday.
Oh, that's good. That's actually very good. But you're competing with the first weekend of the NFL. That's the unfortunate part.
So just so you know, during the regular season, Seattle won their first matchup 87-77. Seattle won the second matchup 97-91. And on August 9th, they met for the last time at Washington, Mystics winning 100-77.
Wow.
Hey, guys, there's some offense there.
I'm going to tell you, I'm going to say it again, too. And I say it again because I don't know if I said it last week on the show or not. I would take heavy interest in the WNBA if Salt Lake City had a WNBA team again, because that was the last time I really followed it very closely was when we had, was it the Stars back in the late 90s?
Right. That,
and I went to those games, too, and they were fun to go to. Back at the then Delta Center. So if we had a local team, I would have my time very much invested in it. Because to be fair, the WNBA is fun to watch. It really is.
Well, and the talent, I feel like, has only gone up since then.
Yeah, it has.
You know, you've got the Maya Moores, Deladon. I'm trying to think of the gal's name out of Notre Dame that played.
I don't know.
I'm going to feel really, really dumb later, but you know, there's some great talent. So this week, since the finals are coming up, who would you cheer for? And it can just be solely based off of which geographic location you like more.
Give me the team.
Seattle.
Seattle or Washington?
Seattle.
Okay. We're all cheering for Seattle.
There you go.
Go Storm.
And get an NBA team back up there again.
Right.
Just
no kidding.
Just saying, really, needs to happen.
Clippers need to go up there.
Oh, your Notre Dame player is Jewel Lloyd.
No, that's not it.
Well, she's on the Storm.
No, but I was thinking.
I'm looking at the Storm roster, and there is a Notre Dame alumni on there, and you're dismissing her.
That was
that big. I was thinking.
I don't know if it was.
Wait. I was thinking of Miss Skylar Diggins, Mrs. Skylar Diggins Smith.
And I don't think it was as much dismissing her as in that name really just.
That is not the name, like, I was thinking of.
It was not the name he was thinking of. And the look on his face was like this whole room just let out a big sigh of, oh, that's not it.
It's going to be even harder in a couple of years when I'm trying to reference Arike Ogunbowale from all of her game winners.
Say and, that 10 times fast.
I can't.
You know, one reason why Seattle's so good is they have three players from UConn.
Ooh, yeah, that says it all right
and
there.
And women's basketball, it's UConn and everybody else.
Yep.
That's not true.
Devin, UConn has been the historic yearly perennial favorite when it comes to college basketball.
I'm sorry. Who did they lose to in the Final Four last season?
Have no idea.
Who won the national championship last season?
Who?
On a game winner from Ms. Arike Ogunbowale?
Who?
Notre Dame.
Oh, there's your fandom again.
There it is. Okay, hey. We could do more quick hits, but I want to talk about one long hit, and we're going to make everybody mad again because that's what we do here.
I was waiting for this one.
Yeah. Let's
know where we're going.
Let's go light some shoes on fire.
Oh, yes.
Let's talk about it because last week we did a quick hit on Cap and the lawsuit against the NFL, and then I think it was Saturday or Sunday, right after we recorded one of those days. The internet went crazy, and it's ridiculous, and the message continues to get lost, and now there's a ton of discussion about Pat Tillman again. John, I'm going to give you free rein. Let's just jump into it. Everyone knows what we're getting at.
Yeah. Apparently, Nike's been paying him the whole time, but they thought this would be a good time to start the campaign. Fine. I've you know, okay. It started a lot of memes. It went viral. It's been the talk of the town. So I would say mission accomplished for Nike. And all these people who are setting their Nikes on fire, that's just stupid. Don't want them, give them to DI. Give them to Salvation Army. Just
give them to the veterans. So
yeah, I saw a few people say that.
Yep, I've also seen some photos from some active military who have shared they wear Nike boots and will continue to now. And it was very interesting to read that. A couple military guys posted it on Twitter, and it got retweeted in my timeline. So
yeah,
those are good looking boots too. I'm not gonna lie.
Oh yeah, they are.
I didn't know Nike made those.
No, neither did I. But they were good looking, and I'm with John on this one. I actually have no issue with this whatsoever. And you're right, Devin. The talk is going to be about, and it's unfortunate that Tillman gets brought into this as well. But that all of this, it's unfortunate. All the talk ends up being about this instead of what it should be about. Read something the other day, a reminder that Pat Tillman's wife does not like his name being brought to try and silence people and stuff, and that she doesn't like this, that she feels that Tillman, I think it was his autobiographer, or I mean his biographer, whatever, who said that she and Tillman, if he were alive, would actually back Cap on this.
Yes, John Krakauer, great biographer, wrote Into the Wild, also wrote Into Thin Air. Fantastic writer.
I want to read some responses on Twitter for real quick, for just brief, because I was trying to find the right words of how I felt about this all along. Because to be fair, I actually have no issue with this whatsoever with Nike and with Cap. But everybody talks about, oh, well, Cap can't speak. He didn't sacrifice anything. But I think lost in this isn't about Cap. I read this tweet the other day from a good friend, Jason for the Love. Have we all missed the possibility that the Nike ad with Cap wasn't that he was the one who made the sacrifices, but rather he is the face of so many faceless people who have sacrificed or lost their lives to minority injustice? Had some responses to that. Somebody, Robert Trishman's good response that I do think people miss that, especially when they say, but he's a millionaire athlete. Yeah, he knows that. He's doing it for those who don't have his platform or privilege. And I think that's something that through all of this is getting forgotten. This isn't about Cap sacrificing. This is about others sacrificing. This is about Cap being the face of those folks. And I think, once again, the message gets lost and missed because people want to argue about somebody who they think shouldn't be doing it.
And I want to point out something here that maybe people don't know about us three. I would say that the three of us are very different in many ways.
Absolutely.
About our political affiliation, political attitudes. And yet this is something that through discussion, and we've had a lot of them on this, we all can kind of see eye to eye, even if we don't entirely agree.
Right.
We have this discussion, and it seems to go pretty smoothly between the three of us.
It does. We're all distinctly different. I am very conservative. I'll tell you that right now. Does that mean I voted for Trump? No. Does that mean I support him? No. Does that mean I don't have viewpoints that can fit in line with the opposite side? Absolutely, because I can find middle ground. And I think John can do that well. I think you can do that well. We can discuss this. Do I have issue with Cap kneeling rather than standing for the national anthem? We go back to that. Yeah, that's not something I would do. But do I support him? Absolutely, 100%, because I know what he's trying to accomplish, and I support that ideal completely.
I think it's listening to the message.
Yes.
And I think that's what people are failing to
Agreed.
Do here. Now, with that, the print ad was shown, which I thought was very powerful and very well done.
Yes.
And if you look at the entire campaign that they did, all of them are absolutely fantastic. There's one of Serena Williams. There was one of OBJ, I think. One of the rookie linebacker from that's up in Seattle. I lose his name at the moment.
I can't remember.
Shaq Griffin, is that right?
Oh, yeah. Is that right? Yeah.
Sounds about right.
John, is that correct?
I believe so.
But I want to ask, have you guys seen the video ad?
Yes.
Okay.
I have not.
You have not?
Cap posted it on his Instagram. He also posted it on his Twitter.
Yes. Here's what I'd like to do. We're going to pause for just a moment. We may slip a commercial in here. We may not. I want John to see it, and I want to talk about the ad itself.
Okay.
All right, John, so you saw the video. What do you think?
Yep. I really liked it. It's a good ad. And I like how it just covers all walks of life.
And interestingly enough, again, back to the point we were making, this isn't about Cap. I love that the video is not about Cap. Like, you hear him talking, but it's showing other individuals. In fact, the powerful one for me was that wrestling match between the kids with no legs?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a powerful scene for me. But just the video itself is incredible. And again, the message, people need to get away from Cap on this. Like, and I don't mean not support him. I just mean get away from your tunnel vision that this is about Cap, because it isn't. Look at the message. Listen to the message. Run with the message. And I think Cap would appreciate it if we'd make it less about him and about the message.
Right. And the ad to me was very powerful in many ways that are the things that are American.
Yeah.
And make America great. You think about Serena Williams.
Yep.
Maybe we talked about it last week or the week before. One of the greatest athletes of all time and American. You talk about LeBron James opening a school for children in Cleveland.
Yep.
You know, that's something that doesn't happen everywhere. That happens in America.
Right.
You've got the women's U.S. women's national team featured in there. One of the greatest soccer teams of all time.
Yep.
Pride in America.
Yep.
You know, I believe the runner, wherever he may be from, that may be the Boston Marathon. We mentioned Shaq Griffin. You know, we talk about the youth playing football, about, you know, being the homecoming queen. I don't know. Do they have homecoming in other countries? That seems...
I don't know. Probably not.
That seems pretty pretty American in itself. And then the scene with Cap, where he's looking at the projection of the American flag on the building.
Yeah.
You know, to me, there's nothing in this ad that's offensive.
Or anti-American in any way.
Right, right. It, to me, I found it to be one of the most inspirational ads that I've ever seen, truthfully.
Right.
And I think if you... I don't know. I don't want to speak for someone else, but I would hope that someone who was opposed to Cap's method of protest could watch this ad,
yep,
and not focus on him saying one line about sacrifice, but focus on the rest of the ad,
yep,
and just appreciate it for what it is and say, you know what? Maybe Nike is trying to show us that this whole thing isn't anti-American. It isn't anti-military. It isn't anything. Anything like that. I don't know. I watched it and I felt more patriotic when I was done. And that may sound ridiculous to some. It may sound, you know, completely mind-boggling to those who oppose the message. But did you guys have any similar feeling, or am I kind of alone in that?
I don't know. I thought the ad nailed what it was going for, and you know, few stories are like inspirational sports stories. So,
and I don't know that I felt like the whole American thing like you did, but it was a touching video, a touching ad nonetheless. And I think Nike nailed it. So I don't have issue with this. End of story. I just don't.
Okay. Well, John, thanks for taking a few minutes to watch it. And mm-hmm. I would encourage any of our listeners, whatever side you may be on, go take a look at the ad.
Watch it for the message.
Watch it.
Please.
Try to enjoy it for what it is. And if you still feel upset afterward, that's okay. We're allowed to disagree.
Yep.
So let's jump over. We'll end with the quick hits and go to pop culture.
Let's do it. Let's move over to pop culture. John, you got some things, or at least one thing to talk about this week.
Yeah, the movie I saw this week was Alpha.
I don't even know it.
Yeah, the marketing's been terrible. The original trailer came out about a year ago, because the movie was supposed to come out a year ago, and it was all about the plot is basically in 20,000 BC, yes. And there's this kid. I don't know if he's a teenager, early 20s, or what exactly. I think he's a teenager, and he gets separated from his tribe and they think he's dead. And so he's all alone with a broken leg, and he winds up befriending a wounded wolf. And the trailer made it like this was the first time that man has domesticated a dog or something like that. And that, the, that ending on that note, I think kind of killed the trailer, but so then it got pushed back, and then the ads that have come out lately have made it look like it's some kind of Disney PG Incredible Journey type movie.
Yes.
Which is also not accurate either. So the marketing in the studio just didn't seem to know what to do with this. It's just, it's a straightforward, simple story, well told. It's 20,000 BC in Europe. You have this tribe who's hunting woolly mammoths and woolly rhinos and saber-toothed tigers and such. And yeah, the kid winds up getting separated from his tribe. And hang on a sec. What? Okay. So, he survives, and he also has this wolf that's wounded, and he winds up nursing the wolf while, you know, for health, giving him his leftovers and such. And what was interesting is about it is, first of all, they made up a language. They just made up this, primitive prehistoric language, so it's basically a foreign film, but there isn't a lot of dialogue. There's a lot of scenery. It felt like a far less violent The Revenant, where it's just really cool scenery and just a lot of survival of him and this wolf trying to survive out in the rough weather and predators, and both of them are wounded, so it's hard to move around. And the star is Cody Smith McPhee, which is, he's probably best known for being the kid from the movie The Road. He's really good in this. I hope this kind of launches his acting career to the next level. And it's just a beautiful, simple story to watch. It's, the cinematography is gorgeous. It's always engaging. I kind of like minimalist plots like this sometimes. And yeah, it's worth seeing.
You know, as you started talking, I suddenly remembered what this was about. And you're right, they did release a trailer about a year ago, and I remember seeing it, looking, I don't know that I was extremely interested, but I had some interest. But you're right, the marketing wasn't good for this at all. And it's funny how you represented the marketing as such, because there were times I felt that way. Like, one was a Disney Incredible Journey type thing. Another was, you know, I kind of had that feel off of watching the trailer both times. I would imagine there wasn't a lot of dialogue in this.
No, and the dialogue there was all in this made-up language, so yeah. It was subtitled.
Yeah, so I imagine, I kind of figured that was the case. I'm marginally interested in it. I don't know if I will watch it in the theater. I'll probably wait till it comes out on DVD and watch it. But I'm marginally interested in it.
Yeah. I don't know how it would be on the small screen, but on the big screen, you know, with all the cliffs and the
pretty wild
vistas and different. Yeah. It's pretty cool. Yeah. And that there's a lot of prehistoric creatures. It's almost Jungle Book like with the amount of, you know, different prehistoric creatures that you get to see.
Which studio produced it?
They're called Studio 8. They're new. I think this is their first movie. And so that tells me that explained to me why the marketing was so bad, is they just didn't know how to do this.
But I gotcha.
Yeah. If a different studio had put it out, I think they would have been able to do a better job selling it, and it would be doing better.
How long has it been out? A couple weeks?
Yeah. I was just kind of looking through MoviePass to see what was available one night, and I saw, oh, I can go see Alpha.
What was it, its initial budget, and has it done well enough to call it a success?
No, its budget is about $50 million, which I think is decent if you want to be showing woolly mammoths and rhinos and all that stuff.
Right.
But last I saw, it was in the 20s domestically. In fact, I'm just gonna look again to see where it is. It's at $29 million so far.
Okay.
It's sliding down out of the top 10, and so my guess is it'll maybe be 10th, and it hasn't done much overseas yet either. So,
okay.
You know, it's I don't think it's going to make its money back until home video, but
which is unfortunate. Seeing.
Yeah, so. It happens.
Okay, well, awesome. Alpha, I'm that's on my radar. I'll have to check it out. Like I said, I'll probably wait till it comes out on DVD. So, nothing else. I didn't, like I said before we started the show, I had planned to kind of do some binge watching of Jack Ryan, the series starring, oh my gosh, I'm already forgetting his name.
John Krasinski.
Yes, John Krasinski. All I could think about was The Office and then also A Quiet Place. That's the only two things I could think about. Yeah, John Krasinski. I'd like to see it. I have heard or read good things about it. I downloaded an Amazon Prime Video this week so I can watch it. So I intend to, and I will report when I do, because I'm a big Jack Ryan fan. I've enjoyed most of the films. Most. I was a bigger fan when Harrison Ford was Jack Ryan, but still enjoyed most of the films. I thought Ben Affleck did
Chris Pine.
And well, Chris Pine did it, but not that one. Some of All Fears. Alex? Who was Some of All Fears?
Some of All Fears was Ben Affleck.
It was Ben Affleck. So yes. I enjoyed that one. And of course, Hunt for Red October, where Alec Baldwin. Yes, I did like that. But I Harrison Ford's still my favorite Jack Ryan.
Yeah.
So, but I'll have to watch that and report. And believe me, I will. I've just been hyper focused the last couple of days getting prepared for FanX. I've been busy at FanX this weekend. So for those of you who are just listening, maybe today, Friday, or early Saturday, if you haven't gone to FanX, you ought to check it out. It's an event. It's worth checking out. It's kind of fun to go to. Yeah. So, nothing else on, Devin, you got some pop culture additions to add?
I got something I'm excited about.
What are you excited about?
Netflix.
What about it?
Atypical season 2.
Uh-huh.
I'm not sure if either of you guys watched season 1. I believe I mentioned it.
I know you mentioned it, but I haven't seen it.
I loved season 1, so I am going to probably binge watch season 2 this weekend, and I'll talk about it the next time I talk to you guys.
Awesome.
Very cool.
So.
I'm watching Ozark season 2.
Is Ozark good?
This is really, yeah, it is. It reminds me a lot of Breaking Bad, but it is so dark and the people are so evil that it's almost funny.
It's very dark.
And the characters get in a lot of danger right away. And so it's pretty amusing. And season 2 has done a good job of picking up that same vibe and going with it.
I still have to finish season 1. I watched 1.5, maybe 2 episodes of season 1. I liked it, although I thought it started slow. Is that a fair assessment, John? I thought it started slow.
Yeah. But by the time you get to the end of that first episode, you kind of see where this is going to go.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that, it picks way up.
Yeah, the end of that first episode got intense, and it picked up from there. So I do need to finish binge watching that so I can jump into season 2, but that is still on my list to tackle.
I'll jump on that one soon because I believe my friend's boat stars in that series or made an appearance.
Okay, then
there are a lot of boats.
So one of those boats is hers. Okay,
yeah,
I believe that's the series because I was like, wait, what? Boat's in a TV show?
But John's right. It is dark. It's really dark.
Oh, I'm dark.
And it's who is it's
Jason Bateman. Jason Bateman. Lynn.
Yeah, Jason Bateman, and he I actually love his performance in it. I think he's very good.
Yeah, I'll have to jump on that. It's let's see, they're 10 episodes in season 1. They're all about 50 minutes to an hour long.
Yes.
I can do that.
Yes. Right.
So, all right. Are we good?
Yep.
Sweet. Thank you for joining us on this week's edition of Jedi and Germs. We appreciate you being along each and every week. Find us on Facebook and Twitter. Join our discussion. Hope you enjoyed our conversation this week. And folks, please feel free to add us and talk about it and have an open discussion about any of the things we talk about on this show. We appreciate it. Any of them, we like to talk back and we'll go back and forth with you. Tag any or all of us in that. Download us on anywhere you listen to podcasts. Tell your friends, tell your family, tell anybody you know to look, check us out. Leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. We would appreciate that very much. Thank you so very much. We'll talk to you very soon. John, take us out.
Bye, everybody.